Stormtroopers, Masonic Stormtroopers.
It's a Pink Floyd album cover.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You have to set one of them on fire.
Yeah, I was just telling them how I did that to one of my Stormtroopers when I was a kid.
How did you do it?
That one I think I just burnt with a lighter, but my Battle Beasts, I covered them in hairspray and then put a lighter to them and melted them.
See, it's funny because with all this stuff, you guys probably know from working on something, if you work on something long enough and you get attached to things...
Oh, yeah.
Once you change something, you're like, wait, something's not right. Like, I think I told you in that Facebook group, just changing the color of the background on those stills was like a major question mark for me. Like,
yeah.
Well, I don't know if I like this.
Yeah.
But it's just because I've watched it hundreds of times one way.
Yeah. Yeah, I have that with my art. I can definitely relate to that. No, it looks wrong, but then if I give it another week, then I often feel differently. And sometimes I don't feel differently. I consistently feel like it was better before, and then I'll change it back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just made a few small changes. I added like a little cartoon, like super, I hope it's quiet enough that it's not like dumb, like a little cartoon sound effect when Abraham Lincoln's son is falling off the tracks, like when he's wobbling on the track there.
Right, yeah.
I think it actually accentuates it. I think it's quiet enough that it accentuates it.
Yeah, I think that it's a good approach to it because it's heavy material, but then you're approaching it in like kind of more of almost like a psychedelic kind of way. You know, I mean, you're not going to the level where you're turning into a dolphin and flying away, but you're like including some, like, it makes it more human, I think. It makes it more relatable. So.
Yeah, that's what I was saying before, Patrick, when you walked in, when we were talking before, I was saying like, I'm almost trying to pull the teeth out of this thing.
Yeah.
Which is like a weird thing to try and do. And under normal circumstances, I'd sort of yell at someone else for doing that. But it's like, I feel like it's really heavy material, both. It's kind of super dark and it's super heady. And I feel like I'm just trying to give it some grounding.
Yeah, I like the Mario Brothers touch.
Right, it's like almost like, just okay, let's just make this silly. There's something else I was going to ask you. So I was telling David before, like, I'm trying to put things in there that, like, I'm not going to explain. He said you were doing something similar with your videos where... Not really going to explain them, but the video is sort of trying to aim somewhat at a everybody audience.
Yeah.
You know, let's kind of get everyone on the same page here. What is it we're talking about? Like, basically what I'm going to do is, so I start out with the Lincoln Kennedy coincidences, then I'm going to go into a little bit on the Fisher King, saying these are the archetypes they're playing out, but then I'm going to kind of explain, all right, so those coincidences, that's what we call synchronicities. Those... When they're playing out these stories, those are archetypes. And kind of like get people, give them some examples up front and kind of explain as quickly as possible, maybe a minute. This is what the subject matter is. These are the terms we're going to be using, blah, blah, blah. But what you might notice is that there's other stuff that's in there that's kind of, you know, for the initiated, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Is like simple things like when I do Lincoln Kennedy, I split it up red and blue. One's a Republican, one's a Democrat, so it's red and blue. But then I also put the pillars, the Masonic pillars behind it, which are red and blue spheres. So it's sort of like saying they're playing out these two pillars at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
So doing different things with the coloring like that, or... like more. I don't know if you saw in the one without the vocals, you see where John Wilkes Booth's got his leg broken and this card drops down. So that's from a tarot set that was done by this guy who was like a medical doctor, and it's this like medical tarot, and he does all these like anatomy drawings, anatomical drawings, as different tarot cards. So he does like the hangman and showing the sort of bones of the foot and all that sort of stuff. So by dropping that in, I'm just sort of saying we're emphasizing this broken leg, but at the same time dropping in the hangman card talk, and then kind of whatever additional symbolism that you want to read into that, or that we'll get into later. And then there's like a, for the super geeky, when it does the Ford logo.
Uh-huh.
You see that it glitches out for a second, and it's really like it's a fraction of a second. And you guys know what a Fnord is?
Fnord? That's
yeah.
Familiar. Familiar. I can't remember.
From, it's Robert Anton Wilson has this thing that he calls Fnords. And it's basically these kind of hidden things that if you see them, like you only see them if you're really paying attention, you're noticing the sort of glitches in the Matrix or the weird.
Yeah, they're like the gnomes. Terrence
right.
McKenna's gnomes, very similar.
So it's like these little things, and you'll only notice it if you're really paying attention, let's say. Well, someone has, and probably a few people, have taken the Ford logo and changed it into Fnord. So when it glitches out for a second, it switches to the Ford logo with the N in it. But again, so like if you would have to like notice it, fucking pause it, play it frame by frame, and then to find out you're one of the people who's actually seeing the things.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, keep up the good work.
So a lot of weird shit like that that I'm trying to stick in there. Yeah, we'll see. Patrick, David was telling me you're trying to do, with your videos, trying to do something similar where you're, might just flash something on the screen for a second or two and not really explain it.
Yeah.
The idea was that if someone wants to go down that rabbit hole or wants to notice that connection, great, but you're not going to let it break your narrative.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly the point of that. You know, just to, acknowledge that it's there, but not to jump to any conclusions. Let the viewer do that themselves. And like you said, it's sort of for the people that already know that, so they don't think that I don't know that. You know, sometimes I do. It's like, yes, I know that's there, but I'm not. It's too much of a tangent to go into in a video. And like a lot of my video, well, I only have two sync videos, but basically what they are just video versions of blog posts that I have. And if you were to read the blog post, you'd get a lot more of an expansion on the points. But the videos are basically sort of like a bite-sized version of the blog post that I made them into.
So not only is the information that you're pointing to with the blurb available, but it's available in your own blog. So it's like you don't have to look very far to see what it is that you're getting at.
So when... the last video sync films that Will Morgan made, we had a conversation where he started to do things like that. I can't think of examples at the moment, and I'm sorry, Will, but I know that we had a conversation. He made this 3-part video series about Andras's film career. And we had these conversations before he made the video of like, okay, let's watch one of these videos. Let's see, what did you notice? What did I notice? Blah, blah, blah. And we would talk about it. And then he would start to make the video. And I'm like, dude, you didn't put in this whole other shit, you know?
Right.
So he would just kind of like put in a little something to hint at it. Or things like that. And I feel like this is such a almost common sense solution in a way, is, all right, all I can do is hint at it. But in doing so, it's sort of the experience of actively hiding things in your art, or just merely hinting at things or whatever, reopens for me this whole can of worms that we constantly talk about. Is it intentional or is it hidden? You know, is it intentionally placed symbolism or is it synchronicity? Excuse me. And I'm like, if we're a bunch of guys fucking around making videos on the internet, going through all the trouble to hide little hat tips and things that you can follow up on and research and blah, 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 you know, what happens when you have a multi-million dollar budget and the genius of Stanley Kubrick or whomever, you know, Roman Polanski, Ninth Gate, all these things, it's like, maybe they probably are burying a bunch of shit in there.
Why wouldn't you? Yeah. Sounds like fun.
Exactly.
It sounds like fun, but see, it's so funny because I'm such an impatient motherfucker that I just get frustrated. I think, you know, I told David, I've buried different things in some of the Always Record poster art, and even in some of the audio editing, that, like, I put fucking hours of work into something that no one's ever gonna fucking notice, and then when I'm done with it, I'm like, motherfucker, if none of these people notice this in the next 5 years, like, I'm done. So, I think it requires a lot of patience or indifference
right.
to allow yourself to have fun with it.
That's for sure.
So, Patrick, maybe you could give a kind of brief explanation of your introduction into the Synchronicity community and how that unfolded for you, because I find that really interesting. Just, I don't think about the way that we're putting stuff out there, and that oftentimes things aren't necessarily as, like, direct. It's like literally, like, one thing leads to another, and, like, if you're not just given, like, something that's like the hub, like kitchen sink on fucking Facebook, but you're
I started researching the symbolism in the Beatles albums about 2.5 years ago, and I was on a forum, which Subliminal Sphincrosphere was also a member, and he would post little tidbits on there, and he would link to his blog, and I started reading his blog in the summer of 2012, and I thought that was really fascinating. It was so much deeper than anything else anyone had gotten into before, and it was really inspiring to me, and opened up a whole bunch of new doors I never thought to explore before, like Kabbalah and Tarot and astrology. And so I started, you know, watching movies through that lens, and it was really fascinating. And then I read through his entire blog probably a couple times, and I thought, okay, well, if there's one person that does this, there's got to be at least one more. So I started reading the comments in his blogs, and most of them were just like, hey, great blog, you know, nothing too, pretty boring. But then there's this one really long comment that was just as fascinating as his blog, and I clicked on it, and it was Being There 723, you know, David's blog. So I was like, okay, wow, I thought Subliminal Synchrosphere was great. This is even, like, so much more expansive and goes really into the Kabbalah. And so I read through that like twice back to back, spent like probably like 2 or 3 weeks just pouring through that. And
which is crazy for both of those, because Subliminal Synchrosphere is like, that is a lot of fucking reading. That's like, and then my blog is a lot of fucking reading. I don't even know if I've read my whole blog, you know, like, and then
Yeah, so the way David lays out the Kabbalah was really fascinating to me, and I've been getting into that since then, and that was really inspiring. And so after reading through David's blog, I was like, okay, so if there's two people that do this, there's got to be maybe a third. So I read through his comments and clicked on one that was really good, and it was Massive God blog. So I spent about 6 weeks reading through all of his blog posts.
All of Mask of God, then. So it's like, you took the
That's
bulkiest
pretty fucking
blog.
Intense.
So yeah, all of last spring and like early summer 2013, I was just fixated on David's blog and Jason's blog. And then that's when I found Always Record. I think there was a link to it on Jason's blog. And so I listened to all those episodes, and the rest is history.
That's awesome. That makes me feel so good, because, you know, like, you put stuff out there and you don't know if anybody's going to be really interested, and if they are interested, how interested are they going to be? Like, are they going to, like, follow the breadcrumbs, you know? It's like, it's kind of, that's really something.
Yeah, that's kind of exactly what I was saying. Yeah, it's like, when you do it, you're like, man, I hope someone fucking gets this. It's like, you know, you're not looking for validation or whatever, but just to have, yeah, I hope someone connects with this. And that's awesome. And so, can I ask, I kind of know the answer to this, but at what point did you decide that you were going to start blogging yourself, or just, you know, okay, I see what other people are doing, but I want to pick up some of those other threads that aren't being.
Yeah, when I would listen to Always Record, it was crazy. I would be sitting there listening to you guys, and I would be thinking, like, you guys don't even realize how much you are talking about the Beatles here. Like, and everything you guys would talk about, I was like, oh man, this applies so much. This explains so much to me about the Beatles that I'd never thought to look at before. It's like, okay, somebody's got to put this out there. And so that's kind of how I started blogging in that respect.
Yeah, I'm just going to tell you a quick story, because I don't know if this is a similar sort of feeling, but I started my blog because, you know, Chris Knoll's Secret Sun blog?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as active as it once was, but I wrote a few comments on his blog, and they started to get really long.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, this is kind of ridiculous. I'm writing this guy a fucking, like, 4-page comment on his blog that's really dumb. And I was like, I'm just gonna kind of spell it out myself. I'm gonna start a blog so I can spell out some of this stuff, and then I could always point someone to it. But it was sort of that feeling and inspiration behind it. I'm curious if that connects with you at all.
Yeah, basically, yeah, it's kind of the same thing. Because I don't have Skype, and so I was thinking, I gotta let these guys know that. They're explaining a lot of things to me I'd never thought of before, and how it correlates with the things I'm researching. And I figured if I just posted all this, I laid all this stuff out in the blog, then I could just link you guys to it, and pretty much worked out that way. I mean, David and I really connected through that. And then that was much later that I found the kitchen sink. That was like last fall, and so that's been a great place to brainstorm ideas and in a community setting.
Yeah, it's kind of a pressure cooker in there for brainstorming, because it's just so everyone's just shooting ideas around, but then there's these kind of places where the ideas start to culminate, and there's like it all like kind of points towards something, and you start to see the implications, and like brain, that was the idea with Always Record in the first place. It was just like, this is a place to brainstorm, so we're going to brainstorm here and we're going to record it, and it does, you know, like we'll have a basic format, but you know. And so I think the kitchen sink is kind of like that too. It's just this big brain where just ideas get shot this way and that way, all over the place. Some things on my job.
Just to let you know, I mean, when in the early days of the Mask of God blog, that was Jason wanted to really take it in that direction. Like, we started off, we had, I think, like 6 or 7 people blogging there, and you know, someone would put something up, and then you'd go to sleep, you wake up the next day, and 5 other people have added to it, and, you know, all this sort of stuff. His thing was, he started kind of, like, really expanding on these blog posts, and they started getting, you know, much bigger, much, much more quickly, and he sort of said, this, I think, was in an email, and he was like, I view that space as a artillery testing range. Yeah. You just, like, shoot shit in there, and you see what happens. You see what goes off. You see what connects. And I think most people look at Jason's work and sort of see it as this fully formulated thing, but I just sort of want to point out that I think everybody needs that. Even the guys that we think got all their shit together, like, they're still, you need, it's really something amazing to be able to bounce ideas off people, and I'm really grateful that we have a few different spaces that we can do that.
Yeah, I mean, I find with Mask of God, like, a lot of these things, it's like, it's a lot of stream of consciousness, because you're like, there's this, but then this connects to this, connects to this, connects to this. And it feels like a lot of the time it doesn't even care to assert what it's headed towards. It's just headed there. You know? It doesn't necessarily have a preconceived idea of what its point is, other than the fact that it's almost like self-driving or something. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. Very inspiring.
Wow, I have too many screens open, sorry.
Okay. I was like, you're processing something.
What the fuck? Come on, Skype. Skype just started to dial the number 9.
Really?
Yeah. I'm nowhere even near the 9 button.
Wow, that's ironic.
Number 9. I shot a message to John just before we went on, just letting him know we were doing this. I was not sure what his deal was, so he is here, but I'm going to just ask him to give us a few minutes so we can kind of finish this little train of thought. What do you think of that?
Sure.
Yeah, I know this was something, David, you were trying to hit on before, was the importance you felt of having that Facebook group, of having just this sort of way of sharing the ideas, and I wanted to give you a chance to really kind of speak to that.
Well, some of, like, my, at least even for my own, like, self, processing of the information, like, and, like, there's, like, key things that have come out of just, like, the most random conversations where I don't even feel like a lot of the time the people who presented it realized the implications of what they were presenting. And because it's such an open situation and there's kind of, like, no bad idea, it just, like, allowed for that to develop, or it continues to develop. And, like, I'm really grateful for that. And I'm grateful for Always Record, too, because of that. Because it's not like everything we fucking say is very significant, you know?
No,
but there's,
no,
like, things that get said, like, and even, like, they just slip out sometimes. And it's like, I didn't even... And then it'll be, like, later, I'll, like, connect it to something else that I didn't realize. And, yeah, it's huge. It's really important.
And I think there's really something to having that thread as well. Like, you know, a recorded conversation, just like Always Record, where it's one thing to have a conversation and you're like, as you're talking, you're like, okay, yeah, oh, I get you. And then you can go back and listen to it again and you're like, oh man, I now really get what he was trying to say to me, that in the moment I might have been thinking about something else or something I wanted to add to the company, you know, whatever it is. Like, you're just able to come back to it in a different mind space and really absorb it differently. And I find with those Facebook threads, it's something very similar, where sometimes if I only have 5 minutes to look at Facebook, I'm sort of scrolling through and I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Okay, I see where he's going with that, blah, blah, blah. And you just sort of like scroll through. But then when something sparks in your mind, you're like, wait, I got to go back and check that out. Like, there was something there. When you can actually go and start clicking on all the links and do all those things, it really does open up just a really amazing world to what other people are able to bring to the conversation. And
the only thing is, I don't like to listen to myself after I'm recorded. I want to skip to like the next person's deal, whatever. And I'm like, I don't know, like if I go on like a whole like, you know, like my own stream of consciousness, I'm not as interested in that as I am others, you know?
Yeah, it's like I hear myself think in my own mind all the time. I want to hear what this other guy's got to say. That's why it's good to bring on guys like Patrick and John and just different people, the guests that we have on, I think does something to get us outside our own heads and our own asses sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I already know my own paradigm. I know what I'm existing within. I'm not really as interested in that, you know. The reason I am adamant about it communicating it is so I can get it out of my head, not to put it back in.
Yeah.
I'm trying to release what's spinning around, you know, or take it someplace else, you know.
I'm glad to hear you say that. Patrick, I don't know if you would agree with this. I mean, it's going to sound weird. You know, I for the longest time, and I really think about whether it's a blog post, a video, a podcast, or whatever you're making to express something, you know, even making the images for Always Record or whatever. It's almost like taking a really big mental shit. It's like I have all this stuff stewing up in my brain, and I just need to, like, get some of it out.
You're like, ah.
Yeah, it's like opening a valve and letting some release. But, you know, I hope that doesn't sound, like, offensive to, you know, like, I'm putting my shit out there, but I'm saying, like, it's
right,
like,
but it's gold.
That's right.
It can be turned into gold. That's the thing about shit.
Yeah, for me, it's kind of like once I kind of connect all these things in my head, I like to lay them out somewhere so I can just see them all, you know, laid out, and I can leave it there, sort of a record, so I can move on to something else now. Okay, it's like, okay, now I don't have to keep track of these million things all at once. Mm-hmm. I can put them into, like, one piece and then go back to it later when I want to remember something from it. And now that my mind's cleared, I can move on to a new project and, you know, collect a million new nodes that I can connect together and then kind of one project to another, you know, kind of like that.
I mean, that's all my blog is to me at this point, is reference material. And the only reason why I go back to old blogs is if I need to read through something that I've forgotten. This is so much information to maintain. I can only keep so much in there as short-term memory. And I know that
so we're saying the same thing. I'm just giving a crude phrasing for it. Yeah, it's like I need to free up some space. I need some release and to free up some space in my brain.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a little storage bin or filing cabinet outside your head.
Yeah. I'm really stoked on being able to get my videos out there, because that feels like that has created anxiety to be like, I'm finding these things and then they're just for myself and the people who are in my immediate environment. Like, and I want people in Brazil to be able to have access to it, and people in Portugal or whatever, you know, like, And it's fun to, like, look at the geography and see, like, with blogs and with videos, like, where people are watching them. I'm like, wow, how many views did I get in Russia today?
And, like, right.
It's awesome.
Yeah, what does some guy in Sri Lanka think of this stuff we're putting out there?
Yeah. I mean, somebody in Norway downloaded Feast of the Immaculate Conception into their computer. What are they doing with that? You know, like, they want to hold on to that, apparently. You know, I don't know. I love that aspect of it, you know, that you don't get to see where it's going. And that's part of what's awesome, you know.
So this is, we're going to see if we can get John in here. But, I mean, this is actually where I wanted to, if you don't mind, I want to kind of turn the conversation a little bit, is you're talking about these videos, and David, you were saying you're happy that people are able to now see your videos, but when we spoke earlier, we spoke about Patrick having issues with his videos getting blocked on YouTube, and Patrick, I'd actually like, if you don't mind, to reiterate what that exact issue was, because it's an ironic and ridiculous thing. But, John, I want to welcome you to the conversation. What I'd like to do is maybe get your point of view, is to take this in as, not to get bogged down in it, but I'd like to ask what you guys think is the future of, you know, copyright and internet art. Is this something that we, you know, this shit's coming to a head?
Right. So where's copyright going?
Yeah, well, Patrick, why don't you tell what happened with your Beatles YouTube video? Sort of point out what's really going on in this right now, and we'll take it from there.
Okay, yeah, I did a video on the Runout Groove at the end of the Sgt. Pepper record, where they say, like, could it be any other way? And then if you play it backwards, it says, Wally Magic Superman. I made like a 7 or 8 minute video just based on that whole one little, it's not even a song, it's just a Runout Groove. It's not even decipherable. You have to listen to it like 1,000 times just to tell what they're saying. But anyways, that's the whole point of the video. And the video starts out with the Runout Groove. You know, I play it like 10 times so the viewer can try to pick up on what it says, and then I play it backwards like 10 times so they can try to make out what it says. And anyways, they deleted that audio track off of it, so it kind of takes away the whole point of the video. And they also deleted a couple other songs, like Instant Karma by John Lennon, which was it's an important part of the video because of the part where he says, someday you're going to be dead, or something like that. That was supposed to be sort of a subtle part of the video, because I didn't want to go off into a tangent on his shooting, so I just threw that in there to see if anyone would catch it. But anyways, they deleted, it was just like 10 seconds of the song, which I thought was legal, but I guess it's not anymore. So they deleted that audio track, and they also deleted a Donovan's Sunshine Superman.
And these are all over 30 years old, so technically speaking, they're supposed to be fair use, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
so I don't think that's exactly how it works, but
it changed in recent years. So they made it like 100 years, but then, as far as I know, they never specified whether or not that's 100 years from everything that's produced now, or if everything that was 30 years old now it applies to that. It's like I don't know, and so that's kind of weird. But yeah, what fair use is technically supposed to be is something that's copyrighted. Enough years goes by, it's a certain amount of years, then it becomes public domain. And so,
yeah, it's definitely not public domain, but fair use is something different, right? So I think in the example of Patrick's video, so I was saying to you, David, earlier that Guillaume sent me a link to some legal website about using music in videos and different copyright laws. And the idea was that when you use copyrighted music in a video, and you claim fair use, they don't accept the fair use because the music is considered and quote-unquote ancillary function to the education. So that it's basically it's not providing the education. It's something that's just there that's augmenting it, and it's not a good enough excuse for you to break someone's copyright. But obviously, in the case of Patrick's video, if your whole video is about this one line of this song or this one end of the record audio in this groove, yeah, how do you, once you remove that, you might as well take the whole fucking video down.
Yeah.
Don't be with a video that explains something you can't hear. But I guess, so there's this idea of, that's a really ridiculous example, but all these things, I feel like most of the sync films that are being made, I think this is why there's a sort of, has been over the last number of years, a real slowdown in the production of the sync community making these videos, is because they so quickly get hit by YouTube and different copyright restrictions.
Disney, like,
yeah.
Stuff just doesn't fly, and Beatles definitely generally doesn't fly.
Which is ironic because Apple, their whole philosophy was, you know, power to the people and you know, fight the man. I mean, they're the biggest bastards on YouTube, like an Apple song.
Well, don't forget, they're owned by Google now, whose philosophy was don't be evil.
yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I don't want us to get bogged down, but I think what might be an interesting conversation amongst the, what is it, four of us? One, two, three, four. Yeah, four of us. Is, okay, so this is what's happening, but there is a generation growing up that where copyright does not mean to us, and I think the technology is moving quickly enough that it's sort of really quickly losing its, I'm an anarchist, so it's like, this is all kind of dumb conversation for me anyway, but I'm trying to really understand or just talk about what is an inevitable butting of heads of a rapidly growing technology and access to that technology and a group of a generation that is using this technology, using this media and relating to it in a very different way. Whether you want to call that an art form, whether it's people on YouTube making mashups or, you know, memes that go all over Facebook that are using stills from movies. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
We're researching something.
So, okay, we're putting a lofty idea on it. We're artists, we're researchers, we're this. What I'm saying, though, is that it goes wider than that. What I'm saying is that if you have people turning a screenshot from a movie into a meme that gets spread like a virus across the internet, how do you police that? How do you police that, hey, that's an image from my movie? You can't, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, it's being used in very lowbrow ways, very highbrow ways, and everything in between. And I don't think that we're necessarily always highbrow, but you know what I'm saying? Like, we can say what we're doing is defensible legally, and it doesn't matter. And there's lots of things that aren't really defensible, and it doesn't matter. And it's a kind of mind-boggling to see what's getting attacked, what isn't. And I'm just curious, I want to ask this of the group, where do you see this going? Like,
well, may I interject?
I wouldn't call it an interjection, but yeah, you can.
open source is definitely a bigger deal than it's been in the past. I mean, I think more people know about open source than probably ever. So it's a pretty strong paradigm. And so I'm not saying you should open source everything, because look, I want entertainers to be able to make a living and to be able to charge and have some control of copyrights and be able to like derive a profit from the art they make. On the other hand, most of these attacks are coming from huge conglomerates, multinationals, big guys on the block already. So it's almost like so much wealth gets concentrated at the top of those companies. It's like giving from the rich and giving to the poor. So I feel like I wish there was like a sliding scale in terms of like who could bring what kind of gripes. That's just kind of a fantasy of mine. But because like a small guy, right, he's gotta be able to make some money off of all the time that he puts into his work.
Yeah, totally. Like, and you know, like, I feel like I don't want to put my art up that I'm taking from other people to produce that I put a ton of work into. I don't want to make it available because I want to still have a product. So I'll make smaller versions to represent it so people get the idea, but I don't want to just, like, make it available. Whereas, like, if I'm looking at a major Hollywood film, that film, I mean, you know, the fact that people can download it and do what they do, that's another story. But, like, the fact that it's not interfering with the sales of the film if you're doing something else with it, especially if you're looking for something that's, like, a anomaly, you know, and you're trying to present a phenomenon and communicate, hey, there's something to this, it really, like, I think you get what I'm saying.
Right, it's not like you're setting up an alternative Netflix and, like, having all these videos up and charging people for shit. It's not, it's... I think all art is basically everyone builds on everybody else. And so I think it's hypocritical to say you can't use my art or at least build on it. Use it as inspiration, because that's ultimately what this is, right? You're using images or music, but all it's serving as is an inspiration. It's not
right. The big thing is supposed to be
your own.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
The big thing is supposed to be if you're not making a profit. And I was having this conversation with Alan earlier today with Room 237. From my understanding, and anyone can correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I go onto my Netflix and I see Room 237 in like the popular section, like meaning that a ton of people are watching this. How the fuck did this guy, without paying Stanley Kubrick a dime, get not only his stuff shown in theaters, but now it's available for instant stream on Netflix? And from my understanding, it's because he made zilch. The idea being that he put it out there knowing that with this for future projects, if he can have, it can put him into a position where he'll be able to afford, or at least with the recognition, he'll be in more of a position to actually get copyright permission so that he can make money on things in the future. That's my understanding.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I mean, you can't just... I see that as a launch project is very interesting. It did require a lot of work, though. I mean, I respect the amount of time and effort that went into that. But that's cool.
Now, David made an excellent point that I think goes to Patrick's video, right? Which is, you're not competing. You're not taking away from Beatles record sales. It's not like someone's going to watch your video and go, well, I guess I don't have to buy that album now.
Yeah, if anything, he's increasing interest in it.
Right. You're developing, I mean, you're projecting or realizing it. So you're exposing something to an audience that might never have known it, especially younger crowds, you know?
Yeah,
it's so,
re-advertising.
Exactly. It's, I mean, why wouldn't you want other creative people to be like, I don't know, at least getting your stuff out to a wider audience? Again, like, there's no perfect answer to this. It's
right.
There's a lot of gray area. And so almost it's a catch-22. I don't know if a win-win, 100% win-win. But
you could almost
something's got to give.
Oh, I'm sorry. I keep interrupting you.
Yeah. I mean, it's a, no. But it's like kind of like a crisis moment. And new stuff always comes out of crisis, ultimately. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. I like to think mostly good.
Sometimes good, sometimes bad.
Great change.
I mean, you know, there's like the opposite end of the spectrum. You're talking about the small guys. I look, there's someone on YouTube who has ripped off all of Joe Alexander's videos.
Oh, man.
Right? There's some guy who downloaded Joe Alexander's videos, re-uploaded them, put like an extra 2 minutes at the front saying, this video shows that the Illuminati controls everything.
Oh.
You know, and then puts, and it's like, whoa, you just completely changed the context of this dude's video, not giving this dude any fucking credit for it, mind you. You're just claiming it as your own. I don't know. That's fucked up.
Yeah, definitely. I've read Jaron Lanier's new book, and he addresses these issues of, like, again, how would you deal with, like, something like that? And, well, even his system wouldn't completely solve it, because he puts forward the idea of, like, micropayments for... So the progenitor of a project, right? So it wouldn't be the progenitor of a Beatles album, but if you use it in a mashup or whatever, you're allowed a certain amount of leeway. I mean, certain rules would have to be written about it. But then when your item is used, there always has to be reference to your work, one, and two, you get a micropayment. So it, like, is a royalty system for everybody. And it's all just very micropayment-based. And I think there's some... I'd like to see maybe that attempted, and now there's a lot of, like, issues with that, but I think that's a creative idea as well as a possibility. But, again, it doesn't solve everything, but you got to start somewhere, I guess.
Yeah, it's really difficult to be bombarded with a ton of multimedia all the time, no matter what. Even if you're avoiding it, you're still... You can't get around it. And then to not be able to be in a position where you can point out what's happening with programming, that feels really fucked up to me. Like, for example, I put on Sideways, and at the 42-minute mark exactly, you know, there's a scene where they're, like, they're hanging out and they're drunk, and they're trying to portray their drunkenness by fading in and out from shot to shot. And the guy takes Thomas Hayden Church or whatever from Wings. He takes a bottle of wine, and he says to the other guy, he says, "Hey, what does this remind you of?" And so I freeze frame it. I'm like, what does that remind me of? It says Whitecraft 2001. And then I'm like, I see Whitecraft, I see witchcraft, and I see 2001. What's the first thing I think of, especially with, like, a bottle of wine, you know, the new wine dying on the vine? I'm like, fucking 9/11, obviously. I mean, it's open to interpretation, but that's what I see. And then immediately following that, at exactly 42:00, a finger goes up, a hand goes up, and the finger bends, and if you turn the volume way the fuck up, you hear Red Rum. And so it goes, what does this remind you of? Witchcraft 2001, Red Rum, murder, Red Rum, wine. Like, it's just, I'm like, that's fucking incredible. Now, if I want to go on...
I'm surprised you didn't think Whitecraft is the Discovery mission from 2001, A Space Odyssey. The Whitecraft.
Shit.
The White... spacecraft, yeah.
Well, there you go. See, I didn't even catch that. But my point being that if I want to, like, put that on YouTube, I, like, want to show that. Hey, look what they did. They snuck this in there, and look at the mark at which they did it. I mean, Danny wears his 42 shirt. He's watching Summer 42, you know? Like, 42-minute mark. That's symbolic, you know? And so, like, but if I put that video up and I have it removed, that's, like, I mean... You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, how do you show it without showing it?
Right.
So obviously we have a format like this where we can talk about it, and if someone wants to, they can go rent the movie, skip to the 42-minute mark, and turn the volume up. But it would be a hell of a lot nicer to just be able to make a video.
Yeah, be all boom, here, look, and you spread it faster that way.
Yeah, it's like years ago I did a really short video, which is from... also has Thomas Hayden Church in it, I believe. The movie Tombstone with Val Kilmer and Kurt Russell.
Sure.
This is actually an interesting little thing, because Kurt Russell from Stargate, the old Jake Kotze videos, Kurt Russell being the guy who flies the plane into the World Trade Center in Escape from New York. He's the first guy through the Stargate. I'm sure you guys know what I'm talking about. I hope you know.
Yeah.
Them. So in the movie Tombstone, there's a scene where they also make a blatant Jesus reference. They say, "Oh, where's Wyatt Earp?" And the guy goes, "Oh, he's down there walking on the water," or something like that, right? And one guy turns to the other guy and says, you know, why are you here fighting alongside Wyatt Earp? And he says, Wyatt Earp's my friend. And the other guy goes, hell, I got lots of friends, but I ain't going to die for them or whatever. Now, when that guy says, hell, I got lots of friends, zoom in. You have to actually pause it, zoom in. He's wearing a necklace with the compass and square G in the center. He's got a Freemasonic necklace on. And you have to, like, it's the only, like, I've watched this movie so many times. And you, the only time you can really see that that necklace he's wearing, it's actually dangling out of his shirt in that thing, is when he says, hell, I got lots of friends. And I just paused it, zoomed in, and, like, looped it a few times to show this is what's happening in that scene. This is what they're saying. And that got yanked right off YouTube. Oh. And it was just, you know, a 45-second video showing this clip from Tombstone.
Yep. Yeah, I was ranting on the kitchen sink when my video got the audio deleted, and I said something like, what's the point of there being an internet if there's things you can't post on it? in my moment of frustration.
It's frustrating, because it takes time and energy and everything and capability to get to the point where you can do that, you know, in the first place. You're like, I did this, and then it's gone? Fuck you! It's like, yeah, that's very frustrating.
I think that's why we need an alternative internet. Yeah. We need someone to set up a mesh network, and everyone can just host over the hell they want. It'll be like international waters.
Exactly.
Wasn't there something being planned a number of years ago that was like, worldwide, what, World Wide Web 2 or something? Or, man, there was a conspiracy guy who used to talk about this all the time. But I'm probably not going to be able to explain it well enough. But yeah, it's like there was a plan to make a second sort of internet. But, you know, I don't know if it's a weird sort of thing where, How do you have this space where then we do we have to then we just repopulate it, I guess? Because there's so many things I remember, man, particularly when I was in my conspiracy phase, so many things that you were able to find news clips of. And now you try and find those videos. There was a video where Donald Rumsfeld is giving a talk at some sort of 9/11 memorial. And he says, oh, the missile that hit the Pentagon. And you see the person behind him, like, their eyes bug out, like, oh, shit, what did he just say? And he kind of, like, corrects himself and whatever. And it was aired on CNN and all this sort of stuff. So, like, it was a live press conference. And someone clipped it, put it on YouTube. And that was around for a long time. And now try and find that.
Yeah. I'm surprised that the crazed gunman statement at whose funeral was it? I forget. It was George Sr. And he's all like, says this comment about a crazed gunman killing Kennedy, and then he laughs outright. He chuckles right after he says crazed gunman, and then it's like, and then he goes on with a speech. And he's just like, he couldn't hold it back.
Right.
And he was just like, what a fucking joke. I have to say this? This is hilarious. Probably because he was in the grassy knoll, but that's conjecture. You know?
There's a guy, I don't know who his name, but he's a oil person. And I think he actually has Ken, the window that Oswald supposedly shot out of. He has it as like a trophy on his wall because he hated Kennedy so much. Isn't that fucked up? I mean, these are like kind of the people in powers of position or positions of power at like the upper tier. Ooh. They're pretty crazy.
You know, you just made me realize, isn't the Hebrew letter for window the same letter that's used on the emperor card in the tarot?
Hey, it's used traditionally relating to the emperor card and that's the Saudi is not the star. Saudi became Hay, and then, the star became Hay, and then the emperor became Saudi. But yeah, traditionally, yes.
Yeah, the window to the king. Yeah, exactly. Wow. And that reminds me, I cannot, when you're saying Hay, I cannot, since the last year or so that we've been doing all these sorts of studies, the old, 1960s catchphrase, Hey, Hey, LBJ, I cannot help but think of Hay as in the letter.
Right. And and because Tetragrammaton has both Hays, representing, as I recall, Bina and Malkut. So you have the supernal Shakina and then the lower world Shakina, the upper and the lower, being communicated there.
Right, and there's actually a significance to there being two different Hays, and it's exactly. So why is it Hey, Hey, LBJ?
Right, it's because they make a better Dalit than a Hay. You got that. Dalit's a door. Yeah, that was...
Hays for horses.
Patrick had brought that up earlier today. He was looking through my translations from Ramak's commentary on the Zohar, talking about how the two Hays were meant to represent wings, and that they're the two wings in the name, which is kind of interesting.
Thomas Hayden Church was the guy from Wings.
Hey, 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 bombs away.
Fat Albert killed Kennedy.
Right, that's why it's Al. When you call me, you can call me Al.
Lieber Fat Albert. I guess we can definitely move on from this sort of point. It's really been on my mind a lot in the last month. You know, I took this break from Always Record because I'm working on this video, and I sort of had this nonchalant attitude about the whole copyright stuff up until I wanted to send Andras the video so that he can do some narration for it, and I put it in a Dropbox, and he was having some sort of trouble downloading it, so I went to YouTube, and YouTube has a function where it's not even like a public video. You can just make a private video and give someone, like you enter this email address and says, only this person can see this video. Mm-hmm. And I put up a fucking 2-minute video, sent it to Andras, saying this is the guy who can see this, it's not a public video, it's a private video. It finished uploading, and as soon as it finished uploading, bing, I get an email. Your video has been flagged for copyright.
Yeah, that's happened to me too on private.
Yeah. And I'm like, this is fucking insanity. So it was at that point that I realized there's going to be some sort of juggling that I'm going to have to do, and I'm not just trying to be selfish about this. I'm just saying, like, it sort of reinvigorated this conversation in my mind of what are our alternatives, either from a quasi-legal standpoint, do we have the loophole of fair use, or do we just have to start being really brazen and come up with other ways? And I talked to David, I'm at the point where if I can't put my video up on YouTube, which of course means that's a hell of a lot less people who are able to view it, but if I can't put it up on YouTube, I'll host it on my website until, and then does that put the whole website at risk? But, that's probably what I'm going to end up doing. Or, we talk about maybe we could set up a Dropbox and you could just give people the link to it. Or something. These are sort of all roundabout ways to do this, but it certainly keeps the eyes from it. So it's sort of, even if we can find a way to, let's just say, break the law, you're still sacrificing viewership and the exposure. And for us, this is an artistic frustration. If you're a guy who's trying to get out information about some sort of conspiracy, or you're some guy that's trying to get out information about, you know, let's say you developed a, you know, free energy device, you know, it's like, it just goes to show how quickly something could be denied viewership. And like I said, for us, it's an inconvenience, but it's not a life or death critical thing. It's just a frustration.
Right.
Obviously, it's still important to me personally, but I'm just saying, like, it makes me really think about how easy it is to censor things on a larger scale, and more important things at that.
I've kind of had a perpetual realization about my how naive I was when I was young, when I had this kind of notion that if I was to figure something out or to solve something, that like people just became recognized when they made a solution or if they found something. And I was like, you know, who came up with like Dark Side of the Rainbow? You know, like I know it was like on the radio or whatever, the radio DJ, and he's talking to some guy or whatever. But like, I thought that if you did that, it just worked, like you got recognized. And now I realize that you could scream and shout from a mountaintop at the top of your lungs, and it doesn't mean that you're going to get any recognition or anything's even really going to come of it. And like, I think at one point I came across Joseph Campbell talking about that phenomenon where it's like you can have the mystery of the universe, you just solved it all. It doesn't matter as far as the world's concerned. Because whatever means you have of communicating it, something will inevitably be lost in translation, I think is the point that he was making. But there's another point too, just besides like what you're able to communicate, that even if you can communicate it and you have the articulation, you have everything behind you, it might not matter. It doesn't mean that something's going to come of it. And that's quite a big deal to acknowledge, you know.
I think Alan Moore said that, where he says, you know, you have to pursue stuff without any kind of, not desire necessarily, and I think that's Buddhist. But at the same time, he said, like, no, without really expecting anything.
Oh,
you have to be doing
it. I love Alan Moore, but he's the same guy who fucking then he got upset when people, when DC wanted to, you know, use his Watchmen characters. And he's like, hey, sure. I made that.
Yeah, he's a fucking hypocrite, don't get me wrong, okay? But because
I like him enough that I'm, like I said, I'm not trying to call him a fucking hypocrite, even though, yeah, he is. But I'm trying to say it in a nicer way, because I really, really like him. My point is, he's human, which means he's a fucking hypocrite, because we're all fucking hypocrites.
The masks we wear.
right. But, sorry, John,
No problem.
I didn't.
Yeah. No, it's cool. See, like I said, it's not Alan Moore's anyway, but I like bringing him up. he's easy to listen to.
What he said that. No, but, so I want to, John commented here to say hello to Patrick. I realize I didn't introduce the two of you, and that's probably an error on my point. So John, this is Patrick. Patrick, this is John.
Hey, John.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Sorry, I'm kind of late, but I just got the email not too long ago.
Yeah, I didn't see that you had sent me a hello in the Dropbox.
That's okay. I never pay attention to chat anyway. Yeah. I mean, for the most part either.
So here's, let's sort of, you know, David's telling this idea of, you know, you could be shouting from the mountaintop or whatever, but so I just get my thought back. John, you made a really excellent point. I'm sorry I made the joke about Alan Moore, but you make a really excellent point is that you have to at some point kind of do it without the expectation of result, right? It's like you're doing it for the sake of doing it. And even, you know, Voltaire has an excellent quote, which is, The greatest reward for a thing well done is having done it. That being said, I know, take this back to 2011. I had just finished making the Sync book. We had just put it out on Amazon, and I'm all excited, and I go to fucking Facebook, and I put out on my page and the public page, and I wasn't even supposed to have a personal Facebook, but Facebook made me have a personal Facebook, and I'm like, okay, fine, I'm going to use this thing to get the information out. Fine, I'm going to use this thing. And I get on there, and I say, hey, we got this thing up on Amazon, the book's out now, blah, blah, blah. And I get, you know, 11 likes or something. And then I look at my newsfeed, and my sister-in-law has a picture up. Hey, I just got a new kitten.
Yeah.
And it was like 11,000 likes,
yeah,
a picture of a kitten. And I was like, fuck you, internet. Like,
well, our culture sucks. You have to face it. I mean, most people are not using the internet for useful purposes. It's a great tool, and ultimately it is reshaping us, I think, for the better. But at the same time, it is what it is. I mean, I wish we had a more, I don't want to say enlightened or anything, because no one's fucking enlightened, but receptive or interested in promoting novelty or looking for artists. Instead, it's just kind of like, what's the newest fad?
Right. Well, Facebook is getting worse with distribution of posts, you know, and the way that that operates. And I've read a couple things on that. I think you posted, Alan. But I said it before, and I'll say it again. The first thing that comes to my mind when I think of Facebook is the Necronomicon in, what's that fucking movie?
Evil Dead?
Evil Dead. Because it's this book with a fucking face on it. And I get this, like, image of that face on that book when I think of Facebook. And I think that there might be more truth to that than I realize.
Evil Dead's a pretty fucked up movie. It was a lot gorier than I expected it to be. It was excellent for what it was. But anyway, just to comment on it generally.
Yeah, I just wonder what kind of portals we're opening up through what Facebook is and what it's becoming. Sorry, that's my own.
No, I don't know what to do with Facebook. Like, I don't even want to go on there. I don't have a life on there. I don't want one. But at the same time, it seems useful. But it seems like a devil's bargain.
Right.
I don't know.
Though with,
I don't, that's
with
why I just don't
John,
bother.
I would appreciate it if you were able to look at Kitchen Sink. Just because there's things that are being presented from people as they're being presented who are part of a community. And there just happens to be no other message board quite like that. And so it can be helpful. But I would recommend that for in the future, but you still don't have to. I'll leave it to you, but that would be my preference.
It would be useful. I'm not saying it wouldn't. I'm just, my brain is wired a certain way, so it's always hard to get over your habits and your predispositions. So I'm
right.
Just working through that, I guess. So I'll get on there eventually.
I'm just conditioned. Less and less I'm interested in the Facebook world beyond Kitchen Sink. My Facebook experience is, I would say, 95% Kitchen Sink. And just because that is a brainstorming form, before we came on, we were discussing how valuable that is as a kind of like generator of ideas, because there's so many ideas being thrown in all these different directions, and there's like things that come out of that that are of value in the same way that Always Record attempts to be this kind of like brainstorming mechanism, you know? Dead air?
Yeah, kinda. That's okay, though.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, I find Facebook is a good generator of dead air. I mean, I have such mixed feelings about it. Mostly negative feelings about it. And it's not...
Well, if,
Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know. They're just like, they're one of the siren servers. Like, the internet is dominated by the siren servers, or at least that's what I've heard them called, and I like that term. Where it's just the big aggregators, and they are, you have to go through them to get any of this done. This is like the whole issue with what you're dealing with, Alan, what Patrick is dealing with. It's just, they're fucking monopolies, basically, or oligopolies, however you want to think about it. So the internet is not this free place or this, like, totally democratic thing anymore. It's very corporate and, like, very set on a path. And so I like the idea of another internet sometime. I mean, and that's obviously a long way away, but I think
before
we have to democratize it.
But to another internet, I mean, there's, like, people have tried other things, like, you know, creating up other social media sites. Like, there's that guy Freeman, who I, you know, I don't agree with him on a lot of his conspiracy stuff, but we're pretty good friends, and he set up a thing that was, hey, he's got all these people who follow his work, let's set up an alternative to Facebook. And they put in all the programming work to create a social media site, and, you know, it was okay for a little while, and it's like, but it got slammed by all these different bots and all these sorts of things, just like in regular Facebook does. And I guess maybe you need to have the ability to fish some of that stuff out better or whatever. Not even that Facebook has the ability to fish that stuff out, but it's just like it becomes another website, but it's not going to become a replacement hub. And I'm just using him as an example. You know, that's someone I know personally who actually tried to do some sort of alternative to Facebook. And I'm sure there are a lot more bigger known or better funded projects that tried to do just that. And, you know, the idea of getting people, it's almost like a sort of crack, because you could say, oh, I'm so frustrated with Facebook, I wish there was an alternative. And then people have alternative social media sites, but you're very quickly going to get, well, okay, there's me and three other people here, and all my friends are still on Facebook. I guess I still have to go there to talk to them.
Yeah.
So it's not like there aren't alternative options. It's just that if the bulk of the people aren't on those alternatives, it's not really a true alternative. And it just is more of a complaint at the us, the people, than a complaint at the system. But you get what I'm saying.
Right. And there's no easy answer to that or no quick solution. But, you know, networking is always, I don't know, there's a hollowness to that word because it just kind of suggests that you're just trying to connect for the sake of promoting yourself. But, you know, just like the four of us on here, and you guys kind of have a community and that grows and grows, and it's not quick, but at the same time, it's almost like an organism in a way. So it's forming all these connections, and, you know, you guys are, there's a feedback loop, and in that sense, you have to grow it yourself. And when you're kind of on the forefront of it, there's not, like, a lot of rewards. But, I mean, like, yeah, I like harbor the hope that it would be like, oh, that's something I could, like, do more seriously. And it's, I like the skill set I developed doing the work I do, and it's not exactly the same as you guys, but I really value that. So despite, like, all the roadblocks and what, not, I don't, fortunately, I don't dabble with as much of the media stuff, so I haven't had these issues, but it would really suck if I had to, because I know how much work you've, like, put into that, Alan. I like what you sent me. I mean, that was really cool. I don't know how much further you got into it, but the video was shaping up very nicely.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, appreciate that.
But however you're going to figure it, I mean there's got to be some way that can get out. If it's some kind of get, you know, you were going to offer it free anyway, so it's not YouTube necessarily if that doesn't work out, but there's got to be.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, for me, at some point, I just have to say, well, if whoever's listening to Always Record, if I finish this video and I say, hey, look, go to this link and you can watch it there, I'd rather have the people who are actually going to really enjoy it, you know, be able to see it and enjoy it. And at the same time, I'm also making a really concerted effort to make the video accessible for people who are not as well versed in all this stuff. So
well,
I'm
your
trying
book
to,
is like that.
Right. So I'm trying really hard to, like, keep this balance where it's like there's a ton of information for people who are already interested in this kind of thing, but also to make it accessible that if you show this to somebody, it's not just like, what the fuck is this? You know, it's something that they can kind of, you know, ease into and get as much as they can get out of it without being scared off right away. Anyway, it's like, if I'm putting all that effort in, and then it's only going to be seen by the people within our group, it's like, well, then why am I doing that? I don't know. That's...
Yeah, because a lot of the sync material is actually kind of intimidating. So I think it does, like you say... Well, you're not saying it scares people off, but there's a certain impermeability. Okay, maybe you are.
I know it does.
There's a certain impermeability to it.